Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America. Bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology turned podcast. Everyone, welcome into the program. Today on the show, we have the one, the only, Mr. Ralph Bond, and he'll be joining us here in just a moment because he has a number of stories, as he does every Friday, that are really... I hate to say it, out of this world. It really is everything from advanced robotics to advanced medicine to advanced space and, all that kind of innovation. Ladies and gentlemen, you're really going to want to stick around for this because it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, before we get started, ComputerAmerica.com, that's where you'll find everything, including the all-important gold standard show notes. Yes, you can find them right there with links to articles, news, videos, anything that we talk about here on the program. You can find it right there. While you're there, also be sure to check out links to articles, reviews, other shows. Hey, there's something there that you're going to love. We guarantee it. So find us on social media. Find us, on the podcast. Anywhere that you can get Computer America is the best way. And everyone, let's go ahead and just get things started with Ralph Bond. So as I said before, he's a longtime Computer America correspondent. He's been with us for a number of years, and he continues on as our science and tech trends correspondent. Ralph, welcome back onto the program. How you doing?
Hey, it's great to be back, and I just came back from Southern California, where we visited old friends and neighbors down there. We used to live there about 30 years ago, and we still have contact with them. And then we also went to Disneyland. Nice. And at Disneyland, we had the experience of being there on May the 4th, be with you. And we went to the Star Wars section of Disneyland, which is so impressive. I don't know, Ben, do they have that at Disney World in Florida, the Star Wars thing?
I never thought about that. Harry Potter Land and stuff like that. I don't know if they've put in the Star Wars stuff yet, but
boy,
maybe.
I got to tell you, if you're a Star Wars nut, the Disneyland in Anaheim, California, Star Wars zone, if you want to call it that, is spectacular. It's like a movie set. I mean, it's so it just takes your breath away. But related to that, if you go out to my Facebook posting, mm-hmm. you'll see that I put up pictures of this gigantic cake. A Star Wars cake. It's the craziest thing. It's huge. I mean, it's like 10 feet across by, I don't know, 8 feet deep at the Grand Californian Hotel lobby at Disneyland, which is just associated with the downtown Disney part of the Anaheim Park. But again, just go out to my Facebook page. You can see these pictures. I thought maybe some of the fans who are Star Wars nuts might get a big kick out of this thing. I don't even know how they made this thing. I don't even know how they made the Millennium Falcon stand up like it does in this cake. It's an honest to God cake. You have to see it to believe it.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I actually found a news article, but I there believe this is probably the cake you're talking about.
Yeah. Let's see. Yep. That's in process of being made. Isn't that amazing?
It's one of the confectioners working on it, and it's a Rice Krispie model. So, it's not quite cake, but I'm sure parts of it are cake, but yeah, Rice Krispie, and it looks so detailed.
Yeah, it's really astonishing. So they're showing it in progress there. And then the final is beautifully air painted and so forth. It's so, it's the weirdest thing. There you can see the scale. You see the gentleman standing there behind the rope. And oh my, it's really something else.
that is incredible. So, and of course, you also had one of the toughest jobs there at Disney at the same time, which is being a small child wrangler at Disney, because I'm sure it's just a medley of sights and sounds and just so much fun for the kids.
Yes, that was a wild ride in its own right. My 10-month-old grandson, Cal, and his almost three-year-old brother, Skylar. And so together it was an interesting thing. We had the parents there with us, my daughter and her husband and my wife. So we had a team of adults to deal with it, but it was a challenge.
I'm glad that you were able to get down there, and it's been a couple of years since anyone's been able to get to Disney. So I'm glad that you had
so true.
a lot of fun.
So true.
You know, and of course, the last Friday or so, I have been in Atlanta. You know, made vacation out of going to Atlanta. To all of our listeners in Atlanta, I apologize ahead of time. Not my favorite vacation destination. I can see why a lot of people fly out of Atlanta. It's, man, I don't know. Rob, have you ever been to Atlanta, like, on purpose?
Oh, many, many, many times, especially when I used to work for Intel many years ago and traveled so much. So Atlanta was a major hub, and we did a lot of business and so forth and activities in Atlanta area. And that Atlanta, was, I think it's called the Hartfield Airport. I think that's the proper name. Isn't it the busiest, highest traffic airport in the United States? I think something like that. It's astonishing. I had a good experiences in Atlanta, especially with comfort food and all that good stuff.
Well, you know, hey, someone has to enjoy it. I'm just saying that Atlanta drivers drive like they have nothing left to lose. The traffic there is something else. I don't know what it is, but
it's interesting.
Yeah, God bless everyone in Atlanta. So with that, I'm glad that you enjoyed your vacation. I'm back from my vacation, and now we're back to the topic at hand, which is the show notes there that everyone can see behind us. Again, after, you know, well, by the time that you can hear this, we'll have it up on the we'll have it up on the website, and of course, a link to Ralph's site as well to catch all this. But for everyone watching the video portion, we're gonna have videos playing and articles and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
yeah,
just sit back and relax. So, Ralph, if you don't mind, story number one.
Yes, this is. You read this headline and you think, is this a joke? Is this some kind of, you know, massive put on? It's not. So the headline here is NASA plans to test a gigantic centrifuge for hurling objects into space. And I got this from Gizmodo.com. And as Ben was saying, the show notes are so helpful, everybody, because what I'll be doing today with Ben as well is just giving the highlights of these articles, the sort of the Reader's Digest condensed version takeaway. But if you want to dive down deeper, because there's always so much more science and so much more information in all of these articles, we give you the links, we give you the picture, everything's there for you. So with that said, let's jump into this. And there's a video too for this that's really, really fun. And so here we go. It's using a system in development by a California startup called Spin Launch. NASA is planning to test an unconventional centrifuge system that uses tremendous force to fling objects into low Earth orbit. The goal is to make launches more affordable and environmentally friendly, which is certainly a good thing. Spin Launch's remarkable system, called the A33 Suborbital Mass Accelerator, looks like a huge upright disc, kind of like a gigantic frisbee on edge, with a tube on one side pointing to the sky. So again, you need the pictures, you need the video to really get this. And the system uses an ingenious two-step process. So first, the intense power of the centrifuge system flings an object into high altitude. And then a small rocket built into the projectile boosts the payload into low Earth orbit. So it's a two-step thing. And by the way, low Earth orbit is about 62 miles above sea level, if you're wondering about that. And then back in October of last year, Spin Launch tested its suborbital mass accelerator, which flung a 10-foot-long projectile to an altitude of tens of thousands of feet into the atmosphere. And that's what's shown in the video. And that impressive feat was done using only 20% of the system's capacity. Okay. The current suborbital accelerator is a 1/3 scale version of the machine Spin Launch would like to build for NASA, which will be a gigantic kinetic launch system capable of hurling objects to the edge of space. And the system, should it prove viable, would introduce an entirely new way of delivering everything from small satellites and scientific experiments to building materials for orbiting space stations. Now, not to be a negative Nancy and a downer guy, I also thought, military. This could be also to put, you know, spooky, scary things up there too. And it's as if we don't have enough stuff circling the Earth right now, but oh well.
Right.
It's still pretty darn interesting. And I do like the part about more environmentally friendly launch capabilities.
Right. Yeah. You know, getting satellites up into space is going to be very important for us. You know, what is it? Starlink still expects to send up like another 12,000 satellites or something.
Yes.
It'd be great if it didn't have to, you know, power rocket for the entirety of it. I did like, and it really came through in the video.
Yeah.
That this chamber is vacuum sealed and it has like this weird like rubber membrane on it. So like as it's spinning up and then it will, and you know, you can kind of see it in the thumbnail of this video here. It kind of breaks through that rubber membrane, you know, like it's nothing. But I thought that was a, you know, pretty neat idea to just make it completely vacuum sealed. So there's even less air resistance going into it.
The whole thing mechanically, from a mechanical engineering point of view, is absolutely mind-boggling, and what a wild idea. One friend of mine said, hey, it's sort of like taking the medieval
trebuchet,
and giving it a completely new modern extreme rebirth.
And I think, you know, and we've all done this where, you know, like you have something on like a string and you spin, and you know, you build up that centrifugal force. It's like someone said, you know, was just doing that one day and was like, you know, I bet we could put stuff in space like this. And hey, here we are with a model.
Isn't it something?
Yeah, I would be excited to see if it's able to actually, you know, build its full-scale model and get going. But this is really, really cool. Like, again, and this is why I love the stories that Ralph brings. I did not catch this at all. This flew completely under the radar for me. So thank you, Ralph.
Yeah. And that's the stuff I look for, by the way, Ben, is stuff that some things are very high attention and I just want to add value, hopefully. But others are these kind of oddball things that are very cool and interesting, but absolutely, like you said, fly under the radar, of course, in our very busy news cycle with the Ukraine and the economy and so many other horrible things going on. It's understandable these kinds of stories sort of get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, for sure. So there you go, story number one. And again, more information there, but that was a great summary of it. Story number two, and off to robotics we go. It's, you know, and this has been a promise for a while and looks like they're still working towards it. So story number two.
Yeah, this is an encouraging step forward. And as you point out, I have a real soft spot for medical technology and science news, and especially when it's combined with robotics. So for me, that's like a ding, ding, ding. And that's why this headline immediately grabbed my attention. It comes from Engadget.com. Headline here is MIT engineers have created a robot for remote emergency stroke surgery. So it's very specific. This is so cool. It's such a good, noble thing. But we need to set the stage, though, for this news so we can kind of understand the problem and the situation that it's trying to address. So here we go. There's a critical window of time after a stroke's onset during which endovascular treatment should be administered to save a patient's life or to preserve their brain function. Okay, that's pretty well known. Neurosurgeons, these highly specialized neurosurgeons trained in this procedure, are usually found, no surprise, in major urban hospitals. So patients in remote locations, rural locations, for example, here in Oregon, our eastern rural communities are very much isolated in some respects. So patients in remote locations that must be transported to these urban centers, well, might and often miss that critical time window to disastrous results, right? It's a very sad situation. But also to further set the stage, what we're saying here is that remote robotic assisted surgery, of course, is far from new. You and I have talked about it over the years, and it's constantly being developed. But here's the deal. But to date, there hasn't been a lot of research and development to create remotely operated endovascular treatment systems for stroke patients. That's the key. And here's where MIT comes in. For this reason, a team of Massachusetts Institute of Technology engineers has been developing, so it's not finalized, but it's in development, a robotic arm that doctors can control remotely using a modified joystick. You know, the joystick is one of the greatest inventions ever in technology,
and one
if
of
you
the
stop
first.
And think about
yeah.
it. And one of the first, it really is stunning to think that how the, I digress here for a moment, but how the gaming technology community, if you want to call it that, has given the world such astonishing technologies that have manifest themselves in many, many different fields and to great, generally speaking, great benefit. Right. Okay, back to the story. The robotic arm the MIT bunch put together has a magnet attached to its wrist, and surgeons can adjust its orientation to guide a magnetic wire So magnet on the wrist, magnetic wire, through the patient's arteries and vessels to remove blood clots from a patient's brain. This is an exceptionally delicate procedure. However, similar to in-person procedures, surgeons will still have to rely on remotely transmitted live imaging to navigate to the blood clot. That's true, but that's not so difficult or daunting to establish in rural or remote locations, right? But the new robotic arm will allow them to treat patients not physically in the room with them. And another upside, this will minimize the doctor's exposure to radiation from X-ray imaging. So you could have the patient with the X-ray imaging going off in the remote location, the doctor's in, I don't know, Chicago, and treating somebody in rural Kansas or something. I just love this. And the other possibilities here for emergency treatment situations, combat medicine, on and on and on. It's just really terrific.
Yeah, it's, you know, whenever we mention stuff like this, we've mentioned things like call centers for surgeries, where instead of doctors being in every hospital, doctors be at one central location with great connectivity, great, you know, hopefully a really, really good internet connection, no dial up, and you know, treating people all over the world. And that would save so many lives and just be so much more efficient. And of course, it's not at the point where robots do everything. It's still very much human guided, but hey, this is a great first step. And, you know, and of course, for everyone, you know, long-term listeners, always, you know, stroke, Craig, you know, those are, for some reason, really, you know, really close together in my brain. The doctors did a great job with him, but, you know, being able to get that very, very quick determination and, you know, kind of
treatment.
Treatment. Thank you. For a stroke, very important. Yes. And everyone to be sure to know the signs of a stroke as well.
Critical. And one last thing on this story. I simply bowed down in awe to MIT. What an amazing, and Northwestern University in Medical Science is another outfit that's just, these men and women, God bless them. It's just absolute, every single week, their story after story, breakthrough, discovery, this and that. I'm speechless with awe.
They definitely have a great PR arm, but I think what they do better is they direct their students to work on projects that are actually going to make a difference. Like, you know, and maybe that's just because that's what we hear about, but it seems like weekly, Ralph, like you were saying, it's another MIT team working on another thing to clean up ocean pollution, to treat, you know, medical, to handle war zones, to handle, you know, they really tackle projects that, you know, help everyone. So,
Love MIT. And by the way, friends, if you haven't done this, go out to their website and go to their quote unquote newsroom part of their website. It's wonderful. They put together great press releases. They humanize them pretty well as far as making them digestible for general audiences, but also can dive really deep into the geekdom area if you need to.
Yeah. And so, so that's MIT. That's what they're doing, or at least one team of what seems like hundreds of teams and what they're doing. Story number two, story number three, you know, we're still making advancements on COVID because, you know, as Ralph and I were kind of talking before the show, you know, him and his family were taking some because of, you know, because of head colds. I've taken some tests, you know, because of, you know, what I'm dealing with here. And, you know, even though we're 2+ years into this, we don't have, you know, we're still looking for better, quicker, faster ways to determine what's COVID and what's just allergies. Story number three addresses that.
This is really, and talk about something really significant that kind of flew under the radar. And so when I saw this headline, this happened to come from ABC News, which of course is a major national / international outlet. So it wasn't like it was ignored, but it wasn't on my nightly news or anything like that on the TV, regular stuff. But anyway, I digress. Here's the headline. FDA authorizes first COVID-19 breathalyzer test. What? Okay. ABC News. We've got the link for you in the show notes, picture and so forth. You can also see a video here. I embedded it. The video happens to be from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom because this story did get picked up internationally. So here we go. The Food and Drug Administration recently granted emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 test that uses breath samples, the first of its kind to get the agency's green light. And the device called the InspectIR COVID-19 breathalyzer, which was created by a small Texas company called Inspect IR Systems. Their website's interesting, by the way, is about the size of a piece of carry-on luggage. Now, if you're looking at the photos and so forth and videos, you'll see it is, in fact, it looks like a suitcase or a small carry-on luggage and can accurately detect coronavirus on the breath within just a few minutes. And by the way, in the photo, you'll see a gentleman with a long red straw that's going into the device, and that's how you blow into it, right? So while other COVID-19 testing methods have used nasal swabs or saliva samples to detect viral particles, this system uses a technique called gas chromatography combined with mass spectrometry to separate and identify chemical mixtures and rapidly screen for five components in a person's breath associated with COVID-19 infection. And it can do this in a few minutes. We're not talking about, 30 minutes, 50 minutes, no, a few minutes. But I did want to give a little more background on the technologies involved. So gas chromatography is a common type of chromatography used in analytical chemistry for separating and analyzing compounds that can be vaporized without decomposition. I wish I could say that about myself. Typical uses of gas chromatography include testing the purity of a particular substance or separating the different components of the mixture. Ding, ding, ding. That last part, separating the different components of a mixture, is what these men and women are doing at Inspect IR with this system. Now, mass spectrometry is an analytical technique that is used to measure the mass to charge ratio of ions. This gets very geeky. The results are presented as a mass spectrum, a plot of intensity as a function of the mass to charge ratio. So those are the, if you want to geek out here for a second, those are the two fundamental technologies that are employed in this amazing system. So there is a reality check here. It's all wonderful. It's all good. It does work. But as with your nasal or saliva home test kind of thing, a positive result, if you take this breathalyzer test and you get a positive, it's still considered, medically speaking, to be a presumptive result, not final. So like a home nasal swab COVID test. So users, if you blow into this thing and you get a ding, 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 sorry, you have COVID, you still need to go on to have what's called a molecular PCR test for final, firm, and absolute confirmation. But my gosh, Ben, think of how many possible applications there could be for this in, I don't know, airports or border crossing situations or any place where you need something fast, and doing nasal swabs or saliva would be time consuming and cumbersome and yuggity, yuggity, yuggity. Right. But if you could have a lineup of people with, line up, blow into this, please, sir. And if you had a bank of these machines, you could process a lot of people very, very quickly. So I think this is super cool.
Or even just, and obviously, we're still trying to get a handle on COVID, which is, very, very important. Yeah. But for, let's not put it out there, but also the next, kind of COVID.
Oh, God.
Having tools like this, instead of, kind of what jumped to my mind is like, having each person blow into this thing actually they had a video that people were blowing into a plastic bag so they could, kind of save it in the bag and then put it into the machine, so you didn't have to wait for each person to, kind of blow into the machine individually.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there was that, but imagine taking, kind of samples for, you mentioned like airports, entire wings of airports, you have these things embedded in the ventilation system and you can say that,
oh, interesting.
Between this hour and this hour walked through this place and had COVID, and then you can alert everyone that went through that place. Hey, be careful. You might have been exposed to COVID. Being able to test the air for COVID, that has so many more applications.
That's very interesting.
In my mind than just one-on-one individual.
Well, yeah, and I'll give you another. Actually, it's relevant to me personally, maybe to your experience too. Mm-hmm. But yesterday, just coincidentally, yesterday, I had an appointment to meet my cardiologist. I'm with a new Medicare Advantage group, and a lovely man, terrific meeting. But before I came in, the front desk people, they get your insurance card and all that kind of good stuff, but they also ask you a battery of questions. Have you had a cold or have you been exposed to anybody with COVID in the last 2 weeks and all this sort of stuff? And I just realized if they had this machine, they could have said, would you please step over here and just here, take this straw and blow into this thing. And seriously, I think the claim that Inspect IR, the company that makes this device, it's I think about 3 or less than 5 minutes you can have the results. And so this would have been a great tool for that, would have given the staff and everybody more confidence that, yes, Ralph indeed is coming in here okay, as opposed to maybe he's sniffling and maybe he's got COVID, right?
So yeah, you know, doctor's office makes so much sense because you're already probably going to be waiting there for 5 minutes. So yep. Why not have a negative test?
Exactly. Well, yeah, and like the doctor's office, not to labor this point too much, but they always say, we want you to arrive 15 minutes before the appointment. Mm-hmm. Well, part of that time, to your point, could be used doing this. I think this machine could be so useful in so many ways. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about it. No,
and like I'm saying, like, you know, even if it's not this, you know, what if we can test for the flu next year, you know, and be able to do the same thing with stuff like that? Yeah. Like these returns that we're making now are, you know, going to carry over for a long time. So there's that. And then speaking of returns that carry over for a long time, you then have 3D scanning. And you know, when I first read about this, I recalled, Ralph, I think we did a story similar to our next story back in like 2014 or something like that with Syria and what was happening, or maybe it was, you know, 2016, 17, whatever it was. With the Taliban coming into Syria, destroying monuments and destroying, you know, great works of art and culture and history. And, you know, technology came through and saved a lot of things from absolute, destruction, you know, that we still have, at least in some form. Now, unfortunately, because of recent headlines, Ukraine's going through it, and, technology stepping up once again. So, story number four.
Yes, this one is inspiring and tragic all at the same time, and it does involve the Ukraine situation. So, the headline here is, Ukrainians are 3D scanning their valuable artifacts in case they're destroyed in the war. And there's a wonderful video. I think I have that video link for you. Do I have it? Yes.
There's one embedded in the article as well.
Good. And this comes from a really kind of nifty and fun website. The story was picked up by other outlets, but I took the story from wonderfulengineering.com, which is really kind of cool. And here's the story. The Danish UNESCO National Commission and Blue Shield Denmark are conducting an effort to 3D digitally scan and record Ukraine's important art objects, buildings, statues, and monuments. And the project is called Backup Ukraine, and it uses Polycam. And if you're not familiar, Polycam is a sophisticated program, in this case, that will allow Ukrainians to use their iPhones or iPads to quickly 3D scan any significant artifact and then upload the digital renderings. And let's give a little more background on Polycam for listeners who may not be familiar. Polycam is one of the first mobile apps that enabled uploading photo sets taken with an iPhone or iPad to a powerful server in the cloud. And I think it's also supported on Android devices, by the way. But once in the cloud, Apple's Object Capture 3D reconstruction software creates the 3D models, which then can be downloaded and viewed. And of course, Backup Ukraine's ultimate goal is to create 3D digital copies that can be shared with the world. And here's the part that's so important, and potentially aid in reconstruction if, God forbid, the artifact or building or whatever the case may be is destroyed. So, oh my gosh, when I looked at that video, and I saw the passage where there's a statue in a courtyard in a city, and the statue, all you see is the very top of the statue. The rest of it's all these white sandbags piled up around it. I swear to God, I teared up. I thought, my God, these poor people. And somebody went to such effort to try to protect this statue. You know, oh God, what can I say? But at least maybe we'll have these 3D images if, God forbid, this stuff is destroyed. And, have some record of their cultural heritage. So there you go.
Yeah, and of course, with your background with Autodesk and 3D scanning, 3D imaging, that you even more appreciate the fact that, you know, maybe even 10, 15 years ago, this was definitely not possible without much more expensive equipment. The fact that you can do this iPhone, any smartphone, that's really cool.
Isn't that something? Yeah. And the video really does a good job of kind of showing you somebody going around a statue and all this sort of thing. Wow. Really great stuff.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, war, you know, no war would be better, but I think that everything that humans have kind of, you know, have put any kind of effort or, you know, kind of artistic view into, I'm sure that there are war-torn countries that are doing this, but I'm sure that there are also, you know, everywhere in the U.S., everywhere in Europe, everywhere in China, everywhere in Australia. I'm sure there are places all over the world that are looking to preserve pretty much everything culturally relevant in digital format. So this is just kind of speeding up that timeline, Ralph, but I'm sure this was going to happen at any rate. So very, very cool either way. And with that, Ralph, we're about done. That was all four stories and you did, you know, that was perfect. It was a great mix of kind of uplifting, comforting, interesting, and all around, I think everyone should know about. So everyone, if you want to find out more, computeramerica.com. That's where you'll find everything. And of course, we'll have a link to Ralph's site as well, his Wix site. And there you can find all of his past shows. And even over at YouTube, you can find a full playlist. If you just want Ralph, if you're like, I don't want any of that other Computer America stuff, including Ben talking, that is so annoying to me. Don't worry, there's a full playlist of Ralph over on our YouTube as well. So everyone, Ralph, I'm glad you have a great vacation. And hey, we'll be back next Friday.
All right, looking forward to it.
All right, everyone. So until next time, have a great day. Thank you so much. Catch you next time. Bye, everyone.